The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show.
It's a family show, so if you're a guest on the show, please do not say pee-pee or wee-wee on the air. Because if you do,
I'll sneak up from behind and pinch you in the popo.
Well, here he is, Mr. Hoity-Toity himself.
Eric Metaxas.
Could that possibly be more childish? I ax you. Folks, it's the Eric Metaxas Show. Other than Todd, we're tremendously sophisticated on the program. So sophisticated that today, for the full hour, we're going to be talking about an extraordinary book. It's called David's Sling, A History of Democracy in 10 Works of Art by Victoria C. Gardner Coates, my guest in the studio. Victoria, welcome to the program.
Eric, thank you for having me on.
I apologize for my announcer, Todd Wilkerson. It will never happen again. That's my promise to you, never.
I have a teenage boy, I understand.
When I saw this book first, I got very excited. I said, this is an idea I can get behind. I'm sorry it's taken so long to get you into the studio, but David's Sling, A History of Democracy in 10 Works of Art. I've told my audience nothing about you. What can I say about you? You're a cultural historian, and you got your PhD in Italian Renaissance art from the University of Pennsylvania. First of all, who the heck gets a PhD in Italian Renaissance art? Can you tell me what led you in life to go and get a PhD in Italian Renaissance art, except for good taste?
Well, good taste is a major factor, but it's actually one of my favorite topics, which is why art history is such an important discipline. We get sort of the short shrift. We're considered kind of a fluff discipline.
Right.
But if you think about it, and that's one of the things I tried to do in David's Sling, you get pretty much all angles of the humanities come together. And so I think we shouldn't be considered sort of an appendage. It's the queen of the humanities. If you're going to take one undergraduate course.
Theology, of course, being the king.
But you can get theology. My second book is actually on Christianity and art.
So, is that true? When is that coming out? Did it come out?
It has not come out yet. It's slightly delayed by my day job, which was unexpected.
Are you allowed to share what you do in your day job?
I work for the National Security Council staff.
Oh, and who doesn't? You know what I mean? It's hardly worth even mentioning. So many of us have worked on the National Security Council staff over the years, it's not even worth mentioning. Okay,
there
so
are
that's
a lot of
that's what you do, but right. you are an art historian, a cultural critic. This book, first of all, it's a beautiful book. People who subscribe to Metaxas Super, who have access to the video, can see. Look at this book. It's gorgeous. You've got a cover of the head of Michelangelo's David on the cover, but Tell me what led you to write this book, because the concept of telling a history of democracy via 10 pieces of art, clearly that's your idea. It's a brilliant idea. When did you get such an idea?
Well, it was from my first political job. I was working as Don Rumsfeld's director of research.
What? Wait a minute. Hold on. First of all, pull that microphone closer. You were working as Don Rumsfeld's director of research?
Yes, on Known and Unknown, which was his memoir.
Okay, so he was writing a memoir. He needed somebody to help him with research.
He found an academic. Because he has one of the great archival collections of the late 20th and early 21st century for any American politician.
What does that mean, archival?
He saves everything.
Oh, you mean of his own stuff?
Of his papers, yeah.
So like taxi receipts?
Literally. Batting averages. Actually, he'll kill me if he knows I said that, but it's true. But then through his time in Congress, Nixon administration, chief of staff for Ford, first tourist secretary, private sector, Middle East envoy, all these things.
Okay, so he says, I want to write a memoir. And fortunately or unfortunately, I've kept everything from the beginning of time archived. Fortunately, it's archived in order. And you helped him with that.
And we actually released most of the primary documents with the book So you could go through the endnotes on the website, which happened to be Rumsfeld.com, which he smartly bought early on, and click on an endnote, and the PDF of the primary document would come up. So you could judge for yourself off of the evidence.
I think working with Donald Rumsfeld would be my personal nightmare because he seems like a very serious, demanding kind of person. But I'm sure he was nice to you.
He's fantastic.
Because you're tremendously competent.
He's very funny and very charming, as well as being somewhat demanding.
All right. Well, but but so extraordinary to think that you came up with this idea to tell the history of democracy through 10 works of art.
I was, you know, basically, I mean, we were wrapping up Known and Unknown, and a colleague of mine was working on a project on Michelangelo's slaves, which were sent as a diplomatic gift to Francis I in an effort to save the Florentine Republic in the 1520s.
Michelangelo owned slaves.
No, no, no. These were statues. Marble statues of slaves.
I was actually going to say I had a dim memory of something like that. But you're saying that he sent his work to Francis.
A Florentine who was trying to save the Republic sent them to the King of France.
Who was Francis the First? What year are we talking about?
1525. And the idea was to get the king to come and save Florence from the Medici, who were trying to come back and destroy the Republic.
Right.
And I had found it such a fascinating topic, just how these objects were used in a very politicized context. And it got me to thinking about Michelangelo's David, which everyone thinks of as the perfect sculpture of the perfect man. It sort of emblemizes the Renaissance.
Do you remember when you first saw the David?
Mm-hmm. I do. It was when I was in my junior year abroad. I was in Rome, but we went up to Florence and saw it.
Is it in the Uffizi Gallery?
It isn't. It's in the Accademia, which is the professional artists' guild.
And that's where it's always been?
No. It started out in front of the town hall, the Palazzo Vecchio.
Right, a long time ago.
And then they moved it, the original, in the late 19th century.
To where?
To the Academia.
Okay, so it's been in the Academia all this time.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny because in writing my biography on Martin Luther, I realized the David was where it was for 400 years. So he probably saw it at that time because he came through Rome in he came through Florence in 1510,
yep.
It would have been like 7 years old or something like that, right? But I remember the first time I saw it, and it absolutely, genuinely, literally took my breath away. I couldn't believe the beauty and the awesomeness of it. Really struck me in the way that no piece of art has ever struck me. It was just amazing.
There's a psychological intensity to it that I think is very powerful. You have a great sense of presence. It's not just its physical beauty, but also, as I said, its psychological intensity that I think is
fascinating. Well, just because it's 17 and a half feet
and
high.
And it's huge, yeah.
So that's something that sort of, it just hits you in the chest, like boom. But when you say a history of democracy in 10 works of art, take us through that.
Basically, the premise, and this is where I was going with the slaves, is thinking about the original political context of these very well-known objects is not a very fashionable thing to do these days, but I think it's quite revealing. And the criterion for selection in the book was the object had to have been deliberately created to commemorate a free system. So the people who were making it, the people who were paying for it, were deliberately celebrating the fact that some kind of democracy had been achieved. So it starts with the Parthenon, birthplace of democracy. Pericles and Phidias know exactly what they're doing when they put together that monument to celebrate what the Athenians had done. And I mean, Pericles comes out and says it in the funeral oration, that we Athenians are so great because of what we've achieved politically. Look, and he was literally standing in front of the Acropolis when he said it, like, look what we've achieved. So he made the connection between the work and the political system overt. And that repeats itself. And for Michelangelo's David, the contract for the statue is signed the same month as the reconstituted Florentine constitution is revealed in August of, I guess, 1501. And the guy who ordered the statue is the same guy who wrote the constitution. So this was being done to celebrate the fact that Florence had become a republic again, as it turned out, for a short period of time, but it was achieved.
Wow. Well, I want to get we've only got seconds mm-hmm. left here before we go to the break, but it is a gorgeous book. I want to say it's a beautiful book, and the idea is just extraordinary. We're going to talk about the Elgin marbles. That's a favorite topic mm-hmm. of mine. Monet's water lilies, Picasso's Guernica, which I don't love. I want to ask you about that. We're going to be right back. I'm talking now to Victoria Gardner Coates. The book is David's Sling, A History of Democracy in 10 Works of Art. Americans in every tax bracket got a tax cut thanks to the bill signed into law last year. The economy is growing and Americans are feeling better about the future. And you've got more money to spend on what's important to you and your priorities. It's your money after all. Democrats in Congress who voted against the tax cuts are promising to raise your taxes if they win in November because they want your money back to spend on their priorities. Only you can stop them. To find out how much more money you'll be bringing home, go to taxcutswork.com now. There's an easy-to-use calculator, and it'll tell you how much money the new tax cuts are saving you this year and next year. Check your savings at taxcutswork.com and then sign a letter to Congress telling them to keep their hands off your tax cut savings because the money you're saving is yours. Go to taxcutswork.com, check your savings, and let Congress know you want to keep your savings. Go to taxcutswork.com. That's taxcutswork.com.
CBN Documentaries presents To Life, a five-part short film documentary series showcasing the work of Israeli volunteers and service organizations around the world. Featuring stunning cinematography and moving interviews, To Life is an up-close look at how Israel has been at the forefront of humanitarian and disaster relief work since the 1950s. Visit tolifethemovie.com to watch this inspiring series. That's tolifethemovie.com.
Wondering how you can make a difference with your cell phone? Check out Patriot Mobile, America's only conservative cell phone company. Patriot's mission is to provide a portion of their profits to conservative causes. You get the same great nationwide service as Big Mobile, transparent pricing, competitive plans, easy switching, discounts for active military, veterans, and first responders. All you need to know is their address, patriotmobile.com. That's patriotmobile.com. Patriot Mobile, built on conservative principles.
Hi, this is Rhett Rasmussen of BestHotGrill.com. We make the Solaire infrared grills. Those amazing gas grills that heat up to over 1,000 degrees in just 3 minutes to provide professional chef quality performance in your own backyard. We have really thought out the design of our Solaire grills so that if your tastes or needs change, you don't have to buy a new grill. All Solaire grills are designed as a built-in so that if you buy one on a cart but later build a backyard kitchen, you merely unbolt the grill head and set it in the island. Solaire Infravection grills have both infrared and convection burners. But if you later decide you want to change the configuration, you may do so, since the burners pop in and out without tools. And with their quality materials and construction, your Solaire grill will be the last grill you'll ever buy. Learn more about these fantastic USA-made grills at BestHotGrill.com. That's BestHotGrill.com. Solaire Infrared at BestHotGrill.com.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with ReputationDefender.com. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-651-4888 now. That's 800-651-4888 for your free Reputation Analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with ReputationDefender.com. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-651-4888 to learn more. 800-651-4888. That's 800-651-4888. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.
I see your teeth flash, Jamaican honey so sweet. Down in Lexington, cross borders, Elbert Street.
Hey there, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. We're talking about art. We're talking about history. We're talking about democracy. My guest is Victoria C. Gardner Coates, not to be confused with all the other Victoria Coateses out there. Victoria, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You should be very proud of this book. It's called David Sling, A History of Democracy in 10 Works of Art. So let's go through it. You're saying that these 10 works of art, each of them was created somehow or associated with a moment in which democracy was being celebrated. Mm-hmm. So you just mentioned the Parthenon. And what was the next one? Sorry.
The Roman Brutus, the bronze statue of the founder of the Roman Republic.
Okay, so my knowledge of history in some places is very dim. So Brutus is considered the founder of the Republic?
He was the one who expelled the Tarquin kings from Rome and establishes the Republic. And I'm going to get the date wrong and I'd be horribly embarrassed, but the end of the 6th century B.C., and it's one of the most enduring experiments in democracy.
This is the same Brutus that stabbed Julius Caesar?
No,
of course not. That happened
his
5 centuries
ancestor,
later.
But right. The interesting thing is Marcus Junius Brutus, who's the one who stabbed Caesar, refers to Lucius Brutus. And actually, it's in the book. He strikes a coin with the ancestor on one side and he's on the other.
Uh-huh.
And the daggers that they both used to kill tyrants.
Wow. It's hard to believe sometimes. I mean, so the idea that this bronze sculpture from the 6th century BC mm-hmm. exists is amazing.
And it was dug up in the course of the Renaissance sort of revitalization of the Capitoline Hill, which was the heart of Roman democracy.
But I mean, I just know. I mean, I've seen so much of this kind of thing. But I know that a 6th century BC Roman bust like this is incredibly rare. I mean, it's just amazing that they discovered this and that it exists and that it's
absolutely. I mean, and that's part of the challenge and the interest of studying the ancient world is our record of it is so fragmentary. And we tend to rely on texts, but as it turns out, objects can tell you the same amount. It's best to study both.
Right. So this was discovered in Rome.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I'm even startled at how beautiful it is, how realistic it is. It really looks like classical Greek.
Actually, very distinctively Roman because of the realism, the word you use. The Greeks actually are heavily vested in idealism. They don't enjoy individual features. They like the perfect.
Until we get to the Hellenistic age.
The Hellenistic age, there's a shift. You're going to get an A+ on your history test.
I wanted to impress you that I knew something. But it is interesting because even here in the museum, the Metropolitan Museum, mm-hmm. there's some art. I think it's from the Hellenistic age. And it's so incredibly realistic that it's shocking that you're seeing an old mm-hmm. man with, you know, sagging mm-hmm. musculature in marble from so long ago. But anyway, this is even older than that.
And that was the Roman contribution because they knew they couldn't outdo the Greeks in idealism.
Yeah.
And so they said, look at us. Look at what we've achieved. And we are important because of our individuality. And that's where portraiture comes from. It doesn't exist in the Greek tradition, an individual portrait. So if you want to go take a selfie, this is the origins of it.
Wow. I think it's cheaper just to take a selfie than to bronze is hard to get here in New York. But this is beautiful. And it says Delphi. Why does it say Delphi?
The story starts in Delphi because Brutus was actually a cousin of the royal family. And he and his imperial cousins go to the oracle to find out who will be the next king of Rome. And
they took the oracle of Delphi pretty seriously.
Very seriously. They didn't have Google. So
I mean, but it's kind of funny because it's like the magic eight ball. Who are the priests and priestesses at Delphi, and what do they say? I've always wanted to know more about that. But anyway, we're talking about art here, so but that's how this mm-hmm. begins. All right. Well, we have so little time. I want to get we should gallop ahead, and then
okay.
we can come back to whatever. So what's the third piece of art?
The third is St. Mark's in Venice, which is sometimes thought of as the Cathedral of Venice. It's
yeah.
not. It's the Palace Chapel of the Doges, and it was designed to both celebrate Venice's imperial achievements and then to document the wealth of the city.
Okay.
Important to realize that what we see when we go to St. Mark's now is just a shadow of its former wealth when Napoleon, who's like an evil pixie, he shows up in this book almost every chapter, sort of coming in to grab the works of art.
Right. He had good taste. A lot of bad people have good taste.
Excellent, excellent taste. Yeah. But they melted down the vast majority of the treasury of St. Mark's in the late 18th century.
Napoleon did
and took it all. And then the only reason the Palo d'Oro, the great gold altarpiece in St. Mark's, survives is they assumed it was fake because it was so big. They thought it was plate and
so
not
worth. Napoleon was such a bum that he would have melted down the altarpiece from St. Mark's.
For money. I mean, they needed the money.
Okay. Well, then there you go. Now, of course, there are 18 centuries between the Brutus and St. Mark's Basilica. So there was not a lot of celebration of democracy, obviously, in those centuries.
There really wasn't. I mean, there are some. You know, you can argue about individual cases, but really, it's the Greek and the Roman model that
right.
are transmitted then
sure.
through Venice into Western Europe, and you know, then there's a pretty much a continual representation of democracy going forward.
Well, now, the book obviously is not strictly chronological
no.
because the Acropolis, of course, happens after the bust of Brutus.
Yeah, in terms of the historical events, yes.
In terms of historical events, okay.
The statue is put up later to celebrate him.
Right. Oh, I see.
I don't
want to
get
saying.
Too weedy on the dates.
Well, but I'm just kind of, you know, I'm wondering what the why.
Well, and the Greeks and the Romans would be thrilled that you made that point because the Greeks always say that they are first and they really
are. Well, listen, I'm Greek and I know that the Greeks are first, but you know, I'm happy to quibble with people over that.
You can argue with the Romans, yeah.
I can argue with the Romans. But it is interesting when you say that the Roman Republic mm-hmm. began that early. I really didn't know that.
Well, they claim that.
Yeah. But they also claim that Romulus and Remus were suckled by a she-wolf. And we know probably that's not true.
But it's an excellent founding myth for one of the great militaristic cities, empires
right.
the world has known.
If you're trying to build a myth, a she-wolf is always a great thing
yep.
to have. Okay, so then we leap ahead to David himself, mm-hmm. as it were. So when I think of Florence and the Renaissance, I guess I don't think of democracy. So that's a little bit of a surprise to me.
Yeah, the Florentines were intensely proud of it, that they established basically a mercantile republic. It was all based on trade. Actually, if you go back one page, another coin, that's the Florentine florin, which is the first hard currency in Europe, and it's the basis of Florence's wealth. And so if you don't
have— And that's the 13th century.
Yeah, if you don't have a florin, no David, no Mona Lisa— None of that exists. That's what fuels it. That's what pays for
it. So free market capitalism helped.
It helped a huge amount. And there's a fair dosage of that throughout David's sling. And the Medici, of course, are the great beneficiaries of that. They
right.
also are Michelangelo's early patrons. But they take it too far and eventually are expelled in 1492, a year famous, obviously, for other reasons.
Yeah.
And there's a period when Savonarola turns Florence into a theocracy. That ends in about 1498, and they actually do manage then to reconstitute the Republic because they felt that was really the basis of their greatness, that they were not an imperial city like Milan, for example, or a papal city like Rome.
You know, it just occurred to me when I write mm-hmm. my memoir, I'd love you to take a crack at helping me out with that. Rumsfeld knew what he was doing with you, I think. I'm just guessing.
I'll pass that along.
You tell Rummy that I'm on board with with everything here. Oh, okay, so now we leap ahead now to Amsterdam, mm-hmm. 1638, and the painting is a Rembrandt. Tell us about that.
This is the Night Watch, which is very misleading because it's neither night nor a watch.
Dark.
It has darkened through the years, and hence the name.
Oh.
But originally, it was brighter. And
are they not going to restore this? They're not going to make an effort to restore this?
It has been restored. I think it's in the condition it's going to be in. And it's quite dramatic and beautiful. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, but the idea that it is a night watch is misleading. This was a dawn scene which showed the civic militia that provided Holland, the Dutch Republic, with its security. These were all well-born citizens who voluntarily did this. And so you, as a successful Amsterdam resident, would consider it your duty to do these drills to protect the republic that had made you so rich.
Isn't that interesting, though? Because that mm-hmm. idea, to my mind, part of the downfall of democracy in America in the last years is this abdication of that kind of thing to a professional class. It's mm-hmm. one of the saddest things to my mind about, George Bush telling people, you know, kind of like, we've got this, you go shopping and whatever. And I thought, if we're going to be at war, we all need to be invested in this. Anyway, we're going to be right back. My goodness, it's so exciting. The book is David Sling, A History of Democracy in 10 Works of Art. We'll be right back with Victoria Gardner-Coates.
Do you have money in the stock market? Are you watching it bounce all over the place? While you're focused on the short-term movement, you might actually be missing what time it really is. We are late in the business cycle, interest rates are flying higher, and overvalued stocks and bonds are going to come down. It's time for a new strategy, gold. My name's Adam Baratta. I'm the founder of GoldIsABetterWay.com, and I'm so certain gold is going higher in price and going to outperform stocks and bonds, I've created the world's first gold retirement protection platform ever built. If you have an IRA or 401k, I want to give you free access. Once you see this, you'll have no choice but to agree, and all you need to do is call for your special code. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. On a recorded line, you'll get a special code. You can join the site for free. No salespeople, no rigmarole. Just call 800-900-8000. Get your code. Get it now. Gold is a better way. Gold is a better way. GoldIsABetterWay.com.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites. And now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 400,000 businesses. And right now, listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/America. That's ZipRecruiter.com/America. One more time. To try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/America.
It's the Eric Metaxas Show, and we are talking about art, history. The book is David's Sling, A History of Democracy in 10 Works of Art. I'm sitting here with the author, Victoria Coates. Victoria, tell me, first of all, again, the book is beautiful, so I want to hear about that and about the title David's Sling. It's not self-evident to me why you picked that term as your title, David's Sling.
Well, and that turned out to be sort of a fortuitous coincidence, although I don't really believe in coincidences anymore. The term David Sling is also the name of the second generation of Israeli missile defense, which is the Iron Dome, everybody knows, does the short-range rockets. David Sling is for more medium-range missiles, and it's actually just coming fully online now. But the reason I chose the title was thinking about the David as the sort of the linchpin of the book. You know, what is it about that expresses this notion of democracy as a catalyst in human history, that all of these states should not have succeeded with the exception of France, and that's a different story we can get into, but they all were extremely challenged. And what was it that allowed them to play such an outsized historical role? It really is democracy. That's the sling that is the artificial element that allows them to jump forward. So I figured this out and then was in a meeting with some Israelis who started talking about David's sling. And we had a very confused couple of moments.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Because I didn't think I'd even told my publisher yet about it. And I said, wow, your intelligence is really good.
That's very – well, I think the problem is that there's not enough of a crossover between people who work in national security and people who work in art history. And
this
if there were, people wouldn't make that mistake so often.
No, but I mean, it turned out to be great. And then they've all been very supportive of the book, which is wonderful. But the publication of it was at a great moment. 20 years ago, if you'd tried to publish a book with 170 color illustrations, it would have been so prohibitively expensive. It would have been a $1,000 book.
Right.
And now with digital publishing, which has really come online over the last decade, you can do this where you don't have them in those little signatures where you got to flip back and forth.
Uh-huh.
They're on the pages, and you can have as many as you want.
Wow.
And the team at Encounter, I couldn't say enough about them, led by Roger Kimball. It's a wonderful group, and they just put their hearts into it. And so I think the layout is beautiful. I had nothing to do with it, so I can praise it. And it really, I think, makes the experience of reading art history much more natural because you're not going back and forth.
And so how many color illustrations are there here?
I think 175 is
see, that,
right.
Honestly, that is amazing to mm-hmm. me because there are color illustrations in my books, but they're always in sewn-in signatures.
It doesn't have to be anymore.
That you can do this mm-hmm. is it's outrageous because it is. It does make the reading process better. There's something unpleasant about having to flip back and flip back.
It's distracting.
Well, yeah, for sure. Okay, so as we move along here, mm-hmm. we were talking about Rembrandt's Night Watch and the Dutch Golden Age is the subtitle of this chapter. I really wasn't aware. Again, there are many lacunae in my history knowledge. But the idea that Holland really was a democracy, mm-hmm. a force for democracy at that time.
Yes. And again, they credited that with the extraordinary wealth that passes through the Dutch Republic in the 17th century. Everybody knows about tulip mania, but it's much more pervasive. And the Dutch East India Company, and again, this is a great monument to capitalism and the history of that, becomes an empire in and of itself. It has missionaries that go out. It has a political wing. It has an army to defend its interests. So this is a company, which is one of the first publicly traded stocks,
right.
which becomes, in and of itself, an imperial global force. It's really extraordinary. And the Dutch credit democracy for that.
Yeah. Well, it just fascinates me, you know, the link between a free market and democracy, which is to say real freedom. All of these things, the way they work together mm-hmm. is fascinating to me. I do think that people who are free market people do go too far sometimes in thinking that is by its definition, I mean, by its own self going to solve problems. It can help, but obviously, you know, whether it's China or mm-hmm. other places, you can have a free market that's managed in a way that it's really not leading to very much freedom. But in this case, obviously, it helped.
Well, and one really important point, which I think some of my critics have maybe misunderstood a little bit, is this is not to say only democracy can produce great art. It's to say it's amazing that these 10 little states, you know, Athens, what did it have, a rock? I mean, that's it. And they built the whole thing out of it. It's amazing these things achieved what they achieved.
Right.
And so it's more – they're more the exception, I think, than the rule. I mean, obviously the church should create great art. Empires should create great art. They've got all the wealth.
Yeah.
All the power, but that these 10 were created, I think, is really a testimony to the lasting power of democratic ideas.
We've got about 40 seconds mm-hmm. here. I want to touch on David's Marat. This is the famous painting of Marat dead in the bathtub. What is the connection there with revolutionary France?
David participates in the revolution and the establishment of the First Republic, as did Marat. And then David painted this as a tribute to his friend after he had been killed. He actually ran into Charlotte Corday in the street going to visit Marat the day that he was killed. So he was very personally vested in it.
So see, we've learned on this program that in this case, it's David, not David. And that it's Marat. I love it. I love it. See, I am learning on the program. But the paintings, they're just so moving. We're going to be right back, folks. We're talking to the author of this beautiful book, David's Sling, A History of Democracy in 10 Works of Art by Victoria Gardner Coates. We'll be right back.
Hey, Eric. Yes.
I'd like to tell you about Relief Factor.
Yes.
Relief Factor, the website is relieffactor.com, is something I've been taking for quite a while.
I know. You've taken it on the air.
I've taken it literally on the air. Yeah. Because a lot of people, I think, they deal with pain and they kind of think, well, that's just the way it is now. Mm. And I say, wait a second. That may be. But you know what? I would try Relief Factor first, which is what I did. It really does help. It's an anti-inflammatory, but it's botanical. So it's all natural. It's not like taking Advil or some crazy thing like that, which is ultimately toxic. You don't want to put that stuff in your body. So I take Relief Factor. You can take it for 3 weeks and you'll know if it works for you, because there are all these different neural pain pathways. And each one of the things in the Relief Factor package deals with a different one. So I recommend that people get the Quick Start Pack for $19.95. And then you'll know. It is available at relieffactor.com. I would just go there, go to relieffactor.com, check it out. It works for me, relieffactor.com.
Learn, love, lead. That's the heart of the student experience at Bob Jones University. Discover a university that's both academically challenging and spiritually encouraging. Learn from highly credentialed faculty who share your faith and approach everything from a biblical worldview. Be challenged to love God and others by getting outside your comfort zone and giving of yourself. Grow as a leader through opportunities on and off campus. Learn more online at bju.edu or call 800-252-6363. That's bju.edu or 800-252-6363.
Has Jesus been misquoted, and can we really trust the Bible? Find out in Fragments of Truth, a new documentary presented by Faith Life Films and Fathom Events in movie theaters nationwide for one night, April 24th.
How good are the manuscripts on which the New Testament is based?
Where did we find them? Where are they housed today?
Discover groundbreaking new research on the most ancient manuscripts of the New Testament and learn from the experts who know them best, featuring Bible scholars Dr. Craig A. Evans and Dr. Dan Wallace, and narrated by John Rhys-Davies of The Lord of the Rings.
Some have said that the text has been deliberately changed. We're going to look at the actual text that survived from antiquity, and we're going to talk to the experts who know best.
During this month before the premiere, we'll have the Bible scholars on my show to talk about the movie and their thoughts about making this movie.
We want to get to the truth of it, to separate fact from fiction, sober scholarship from sensationalism.
Get your tickets today for the one night only April 24th national premiere at fragmentsoftruthmovie.com. That's fragmentsoftruthmovie.com.
With Blinds.com, upgrade your home for less than almost any other home improvement. Just go to Blinds.com and they'll help you to find the perfect blinds, guide you on how to measure, and install in minutes. You get free samples, free shipping, and free design consultation.
Find out for yourself why Blinds.com is the number one online retailer of custom window coverings. Now through April 22nd, save up to 20% off site-wide when you go to Blinds.com/shutters. Save up to 20% off site-wide at Blinds.com/shutters. Rules and restrictions apply.
Your cell phone's connected to your tablet. Your tablet's connected to your laptop. Your laptop's connected to your Wi-Fi. 1 week link and thieves are in.
The digital world is so connected these days, it just takes 1 week link for criminals to get in. New LifeLock Identity Theft Protection now adds the power of Norton Security to help protect against the threats of today's connected world.
Your desktop's connected to your smart TV. Your smart TV's connected to your smartwatch.
Threats to your identity, like your info for sale on the dark web. And online threats to your devices, like ransomware. No one can prevent all identity theft or cybercrime or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but new LifeLock with Norton detects a wide range of threats to your identity and devices. And if there's a problem, our agents will work to fix it.
Your smartwatch is connected to your video doorbell. Your video doorbell's connected to your smart lock.
Join now and get an additional 10% off your first year. Go to LifeLock.com and enter promo code SMART. That's promo code SMART. New LifeLock with Norton. More detection, more protection.
Hey there, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. A little Archie's for you. I think that's appropriate since we're talking about the greatest works of art in history, or some of them. David Sling is the title of the book. The author is Victoria Gardner Coates, with me here in the studio. Victoria, again, welcome. This is such fascinating stuff.
Thank you. It's a great conversation.
Well, you know, I don't know where to turn next. I mean, I'm just going in chronological order. Now you have the Elgin Marbles in London, kind of a sore subject with me, because I'm one of those people who really does believe that we should make a rare exception and send them back to Athens. But what is it that, first of all, they are gorgeous. They were created, I guess, in the 5th century B.C. in Athens. But you have them here chronologically when they were brought to London by Lord Elgin.
Yes. And it, I mean, the first chapter of the book is on the Parthenon. The Elgin marbles were designed by Phidias to be part of that structure as part of an enormous decorative scheme expressing the brilliance of the Greeks. And as you and your listeners may know, the Parthenon was actually very, very badly damaged in the late 17th century, actually by the Venetians, of all people.
I thought it was the Turks.
Well, they had packed it full of gunpowder.
Who had?
The Turks.
The Turks.
They were using it as a citadel, but the Venetians shot at it and blew it up.
On purpose?
I think they were trying to get to the Turks, not necessarily to destroy the Parthenon, but there's a fairly dramatic image in there of it exploding. They did a print of it. And so after that, Greece is very much a backwater in the Ottoman Empire, and there's not a tremendous amount of interest in these things. There was a tremendous amount of interest in bringing back archaeological treasures from both the Near East and the ancient world, and this is how the Pergamon marbles go to Berlin, for example, or the Ishtar Gate goes to Berlin. So there's a fair amount of this going on, and Elgin decides, as a British patriot, that the greatest thing he can do for England is to bring back these sculptures. And when Parliament debates about the Elgin marbles, they actually say, we, Great Britain, our constitutional monarchy makes us the best place for these things to be. So the basic argument here is one can debate where they should be, but as they are currently positioned and displayed, which is basically inside out and backwards, these are a profoundly 18th century British object. And there was physical intervention.
You have to explain, how is it possible that something carved by Phidias in antiquity could be a profoundly 18th century British object?
Well, the English in the 18th century felt such an affinity for ancient Athens, and that what they would had achieved, you know, the London is the new Athens, that these really were their heritage, and then they have been so dramatically, and this is also the case with the Brutus, physically altered between where they were when Phidias looked up and said, I'm done, and to where they are today.
Right.
I mean, there's a whole section in here about the Duveen, the cleaning of them, when they're basically, they weren't considered white enough. They weren't the 18th century's vision of what antiquity should be. They peeled off all the last remnants of the paint.
And of course, many people won't know this, but I learned this in my art history, that in antiquity, the Greeks wanted realism, so they did, in fact, paint.
Everything was very brightly colored.
We think of it as being marble, white marble sculpture, but in fact, it was not supposed to be that way.
No, and when they did a reconstruction of it for one of the world fairs and painted it as they think it had been painted, and the people who did it were forced to apologize. Everyone was so outraged it looked so gaudy compared to what they wanted antiquity to be.
Right. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Well, it's interesting in many ways. I mean, first of all, the idea that we call them the Elgin marbles, mm-hmm. it's funny because they're carved by Phidias, but they're called the Elgin marbles because Elgin, you know, whether he stole them or purchased them or whatever it is, I mean, it's a magnificent illustration of the link between England and Greece. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a powerful historical link. I mean, it's one of the reasons that I argue that it would be the greatest magnanimity on the part of Great Britain at this point to return them somehow or to do something. But I didn't realize that when they were acquired that it was thought of in the way that you just put it.
And there's a fair amount of documentation in the chapter, both Elgin's own intentions, what Parliament found. And really the fun thing is the idea had been to inspire a next generation of British sculptors to greatness. But it didn't necessarily, but it did inspire the Romantic poets. So you've got Shelley shows up and a couple of other ones who are celebrating.
And Byron.
Byron plays a role.
Who died in Greece, of course, fighting for
indeed.
Greek independence.
And so all of that plays into this act of cultural appropriation. Which generally is seen negatively, but I think there were some very positive things about
it. Oh, yeah. No, there's no doubt. I mean, it's complicated, right?
First of all,
you have the Turks, you know, brutally occupying Greece. This was not friendly. I mean, it's horrifying. I mean, when you think of the Islamic hordes taking over Europe throughout the centuries. This is the classic example. I mean, that you have so much of Greece for 400 years under the Ottoman rule, and so nothing's happening there. And of course, the British come in and they think, "Hey, let's save this great art. Let's crate it up and haul it back to the British Museum." It's definitely understandable in a way, because what was happening to this stuff, it was certainly not being cared for or appreciated.
This was such a long, expensive, difficult process. If anyone had wanted to stop him, it would have been easy to do.
Wow.
Nobody did.
Right. Well, the Turks got money out of it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, let's be honest.
And also, Elgin was intending to be paid as well. He winds up losing his fortune over it. He is paid by Parliament, but not the amount he had spent.
Really?
He ruined himself over it.
My goodness.
His wife left him. It's very sad.
What? I didn't know. That's extraordinary. Well, there's so much that we don't know about this kind of thing. And we also forget now, because I'm writing on Heinrich Schliemann.
Oh, interesting.
There was so much treasure hunting that went on that was considered utterly appropriate, you know, that these people weren't archaeologists. They were digging for treasure. And so that's a whole other story. We'll be right back, folks. We're talking right now to Victoria Gardner Coates, the author of David Sling, A History of Democracy in 10 Works of Art. Beautiful book, and I would argue an important book. You can get it anywhere. And our website, of course, is MetaxasTalk.com. Go to MetaxasTalk.com for all your tobacco needs. We'll be right back. What I love.
This is Jack from Banyan Hill. You might have heard about that $34.6 billion that's expected to be doled out in what we call freedom checks. Huge checks that are changing people's lives from coast to coast. People like Sean from Pittsburgh. In fact, he's on the phone right now. Sean, you there?
Yes, I am, Jack.
Sean, let me ask you, how do you like getting these massive checks in your mailbox every month?
Well, Jack, we used to put stuff on credit cards living paycheck to paycheck. But now, after we started collecting a specific kind of freedom check, I have to say, life's a lot more fun.
I bet it is. In fact, getting massive freedom checks is fun no matter who you are. And with $34.6 billion expected to be paid out in private, non-government money starting as early as May 1st, now's the time to stake your claim on some cash. To get all the details, go to www.freedomchecks127.com before the May 1st deadline. That's www.freedomchecks127.com.
If credit card debt has you down, nonprofit Trinity Debt Management can help. Trinity will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment, put a stop to late fees, and drastically reduce your interest. You'll pay thousands less than you originally owed. It's not a loan. It's a way to become debt-free and possibly improve your credit score. So call Trinity and talk to a certified counselor. They'll explain their proven program to you with no pressure, just practical solutions and hope for tomorrow. Are you ready to pay off your credit cards in less time for less money? Then call for a free no-obligation debt analysis and become debt-free for keeps. If your debt has you down, we should talk. Gather up your bills and call this toll-free number for a free no-obligation debt analysis. Call 1-800-990-6976. That's 1-800-990-6976. 1-800-990-6976.
This is the Eric Metaxas Show. We're talking to the author of David's Sling, A History of Democracy in 10 Works of Art. We're galloping along through the centuries, Victoria. I'm now looking at Manifest Destiny, this gorgeous painting, Albert Bierstadt, 1862. Now, this is more, it seems, ironic. When we see Manifest Destiny, it doesn't really feel like democracy. It feels, I can see the relationship. Mm-hmm. How do you put it here?
Basically, I mean, and this painting is up the street at the Met. It's a wonderful thing. You can go see it along with Leutz's Washington Crossing the Delaware in the same gallery. So that's a great thing.
What is the size of this compared? Because I know the Washington.
It's smaller than the Lloyd's, but it's okay. Quite a large picture.
But the Lloyd's crossing, Washington crossing Delaware, I could not get over how big that was when I first saw it.
And that's
where was
a whole
that intended
other
to be displayed?
It did not have a specific destination. There were actually two versions of it. I don't want to get too far in the weeds of this, yeah. But it was for private sale.
I mean, it's just amazing how big that is, but I don't want to get on that. So nearby is this gorgeous painting, and it really is so beautiful. Wow.
It is. It's wonderful. It's a Civil War picture. It's named for Frederick Lander, who was a colonel when he took Bierstadt west with him, one of the first artists to go west. Lander was surveying a road to get out to Oregon. And so that's how Bierstadt, who was a very classically trained, talented artist, came up with this whole new subject, which was the American West. And Lander dies in the Civil War. He's an incredible figure. That's one of the great narratives of this chapter is his life story. But when Bierstadt gets back from the West, Lander dies. He does this picture as a tribute to him because the mountain is he Bierstadt lobbies Congress to name this mountain after Lander in modern day Wyoming. It's still there. Obviously, the mountain is, but it's still known as Lander, Wyoming is still right. There. And so that picture was, I think, very directly inspired by the desire of the American experiment in democracy after the Civil War to look to the West for expansion and healing and promise and the future. And all of that, I think, is encapsulated in that picture.
If you look very closely, this is Wyoming. You can see Cheney's Ranch. Uh-huh. It's right here.
It's actually quite
it's
close.
Incredible.
Yes.
Incredible. Just amazing. 1862. No, it really is gorgeous. And it's so funny. Bierstadt, of course, means beer city.
Mm-hmm.
It's much more elegant in the German. We're galloping along. We've just got about a minute left. I just wanted to say, first of all, we simply have to have you back because there is so much to talk about here. So the next time you come to New York, we'll just have to continue the conversation. I feel like we're giving it short shrift. You talk about Monet's water lilies, and then you talk about Guernica. Mm-hmm. Which do you like Guernica?
I appreciate Guernica.
You
let's
appreciate
put it,
it
that way. When you look at, and you can, we have some of the comparisons there, the Rubens that he was looking at, for example, for inspiration.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating story, and I try not to give Picasso any kind of license. I mean, obviously, he was a great communist apologist. Even though he saw the fascists for what they were, he was not able to identify the communist threat.
Right.
So
few are.
That's true.
That's the problem.
We have to keep up the fight.
We'll talk about it the next time. Really,
excellent.
Just an honor and a joy to have you, Victoria. Thanks for being my guest.
Thank you, Eric. This is great.
General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.